Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
On the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like Mecca for peace in a star-filled sky where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey, Dad, what are the Long Box guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless to taking over the world. Yes.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Long Box Guys. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. We're going to be talking about Captain Marvel. I'm going to say the spoiler alert again because I don't want to get any shit from anybody. But before I do another spoiler alert, Josh, how you doing? What are you drinking?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm having the Larfleeze tonight, the giant bucket of orange soda with whipped cream vodka.
And that sounds delicious. Diane would love the Larfleeze. She brought us over that big thing of whipped cream vodka. I'm going to make one of those tomorrow because that does sound good. And I'm going to drink it out of my Dick Dale tiki glass that Dick Dale's wife made for me. And Dick Dale signed, "Rest in peace, Dick Dale, one of the great legends of rock and roll and surf guitar." That felt unforced. LT, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing okay. I'm drinking some Cardew single malt scotch. How are you doing, Tommy?
I'm doing terrific. I'm drinking a Diet Coke tonight. I'm going to pick my wife up after work. And healthy mind, healthy body. No DUIs yet. Mikey, how you doing and what are you drinking in the vast swamps of Georgia?
I am doing fine, and I am drinking a Dead Partner tonight.
Oh, Dead Partner.
I'm back at Embassy Suite, so we'll just stick with that.
Classic.
Do you want to tell our listeners what's in a Dead Partner?
Nope. Go back and listen to the episodes. Figure it out.
It's called an inside joke. Go find it.
We welcome the new listeners by not giving them any of our inside jokes.
Yeah.
That seems a little unnecessary. If you email us at luckybastard.com,
Luckybastard@thelongboxguys.com.
Whatever. LT, what's that?
Luckybastard@thelongboxguys.
If you ask us what a Dead Partner is at luckybastard@thelongboxguys, we will absolutely tell you not only the secrets of the Dead Partner and how that came to be, but also we'll give you all the instructions to the drink-along game, drink-along with the Longbox guys, when to do shots when we say something stupid or repetitive.
Or stupid. Or repetitive.
Or, hear me out now, repetitive or stupid.
Mm. Or something inane that's been repeated a lot.
Yes. Like the name Marvel. Yes, there's a segue for you. There's been lots of Captain Marvels or Marvels. And today we're going to be talking about our favorite and our newest, Captain Marvel, better known as Captain Marvel. What a terrific movie. We all were excited to see it. I have to say, I never loved this character until the movie. In the comic book, she's not the most likable character. She's not the character that draws me straight into her. And I never really felt a huge connection. Watching the movie, I like the spunky, fiery, in-your-face Carol Danvers. Speaking of Carol Danvers, who's going to tell us a little about Carol Danvers? Wait, is that me?
We have different things that we are going to talk about.
Yeah.
Josh, you want to talk about Brie Larson, who played Carol Danvers?
Sure. So we got the actress Brie Larson, born October 1st, 1989, Sacramento, California. And both of her parents are chiropractors. And the only reason I mentioned that is because one of my parents is a chiropractor. She was homeschooled, and then she was actually accepted into the American Conservatory Theater in Northern California. She was, at the time, the youngest person ever accepted into that troupe. Right afterwards, after a messy divorce, her and her two siblings and her mom moved to L.A., where they basically jammed into a one-bedroom apartment. Her first real appearance was on the Jay Leno show. She started doing skits on Jay Leno. And her big breakout role was United States of Terror with Toni Collette. I believe that was on HBO or Showtime. And some people might remember her from she was Envy Adams in Scott Pilgrim. She was in 21 Jump Street and later in Kong, Skull Island. She also had a band, which was terrible. But she does sing a track on the Scott Pilgrim soundtrack, which I really do like. She has a beautiful voice.
Yeah, secret talent right there. One other thing I want to just mention, during the training process to become Captain Marvel, she went through that body transformation that so many actors and actresses do to play a superhero. One little bit that she did, she was doing hip thrusters with, I think it was 245-pound plates. Hip thrusters are not easy. When she was done, she started giggling like a child because her trainer was handing her a cookie. And she said it was the first cookie she had had in so long. She was so happy to get that cookie. She made me instantly find her likable just because how much she wanted that goddamn cookie. Because I'm like, oh, I get you. I hear you. So I'm going to talk a little bit about her character in the movie, not the comic book. In the movie, Carol Danvers is played by Brie Larson, and she is a pilot. She is a self-made woman. She's a woman who had to remake herself over and over again because people kept saying she couldn't. It happened to her when she was young and her father wanted a boy and she was a girl. It happened to her on the school ground, on the playground, and in the military. But she kept getting up. And that was kind of a big part of her character development. You see her get knocked out, you can count on Carol Danvers getting up. And that was a huge part of her motivation. She was a loyal friend. She was a good military-minded person, a bit of a hellion and a hellraiser, a little bit of a drinker. In the comic books, one of the few superheroes who actually has an AA chip. I think she's still battling her addiction to alcohol. And just a terrific character. We'll get a little bit more into her superpowers when we talk about her in the comic books. Not all of her superpowers are laid down in the movie. You see super strength, of course. You see the super blast, her ability to go into space and fly in space with the aid of the Kree mask. We see her being trained as a Kree fighter, which is a huge part of her athletic and martial skills, though she had decent athletic and martial skills from her time on Earth, and, of course, her enhanced strength and durability and all that that was given to her by the actual the explosion in the thing with the thing with the thing.
And as Tom's been talking about superpowers, she does have also the ability to have explosive blasts of radiant energy from her fingertips and her arms. She also can absorb different forms of energy, such as electricity, to further amplify her strength and energy projection. In the comic books, she also has the ability to have a seventh sense. From her Kree human physiology, she can also is also very resistant to toxins and poisons. And later, as a binary in the comics, she could tap into the energy of a white hole, allowing her control of stellar energies, and had the ability to control heat and the electromagnetic spectrum and gravity, in addition to light speed travel and the ability to survive in the vacuum of space.
Speaking of binary, when you talk about Carol Danvers, you're talking about a character that has been around for more than 50 years. She first appeared in Marvel Superheroes number 13 back in 1968 and was the creation of Roy Thomas and Gene Colan. And at that point, she was a supporting character to Captain Marvel, who we'll talk about in just a little bit. But Carol Danvers was a U.S. Air Force colonel who was in charge of security. 1977, Chris Claremont made her Ms. Marvel with Ms. Marvel number one. It was really ahead of its time. Unfortunately, reading it back nowadays, it seems really hokey. She leaves the Air Force to become the publisher and editor for Ms. Or excuse me, not the publisher, the editor for a women's magazine. And she does suffer from bouts of amnesia, which is kind of reminiscent of what they have in the movie. Later on, she gets depowered by Rogue in Avengers Annual number 10. That is after a whole incident which is now referred to as the rape of Ms. Marvel, which we can talk about at a later date because that bears a very in-depth discussion. She did later become binary because Chris Claremont did love the Ms. Marvel character and he wanted her to continue. So she had guest starring roles in Uncanny X-Men. Later on in 1998, she changed her moniker to Warbird, then changed it back to Ms. Marvel. And then in 2012, she finally took up the mantle of Captain Marvel. She, in the comic books, gets her powers. Originally, it's through a blast of the Psyche Magnetron, where she gets fused with Captain Marvel and becomes a Kree-human hybrid. But they retconned it back in 2018 that it was actually her mother was a Kree warrior who was on the planet Earth and decided to stay after she fell in love and got knocked up, blah, 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 kind of an Aquaman story. For the most part, her origin is still considered similar to what you saw in the movie, where instead of it's the Psycho Magnetron, this time it is the explosion of the Beyond Light Speed Drive.
The core.
Core. Beyond what? Huh?
Hmm? What? Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. That thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that explains a little bit about Captain Marvel. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other characters. Now, the whole movie is mostly about the Skrull Wars. Josh, you want to give us just a little background on the Skrulls?
No, I got the Kree, but nice try.
Damn
nice try. So the Kree's first appearance, Fantastic Four 65, 1967. It's Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. The Kree are basically a military dictatorship led by the Supreme Intelligence initially. They're spread over thousands of worlds. The sort of the politically dominant species are they're blue, and sort of the worker class are pink. And then later on, there are genetically modified sort of super Kree that are gray. They're linked to the gray is actually all in sort of embroiled in the same storyline with the Terrigen Mist, which sort of brings about the Inhumans. And at one point, we actually see Black Bolt is the leader of the Kree Empire. Hmm. In the movie, it's just the Supreme Intelligence, but in the comics, yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Kree then. The Skrulls.
The Skrulls are shape-shifting race of beings. They originally were a mercantile species. And when they first got in touch with the Kree were kind of barbarians, and they had tried to share their technology with those they deemed worthy. And when they came to the Kree had set apart some of their folks on a moon and left them with a set amount of supplies to determine who of their race would be representing themselves to the Skrulls. The Skrulls found this barbaric and decided not to trade with the Kree and not to have anything to do with the Kree. And that is what started out the whole animosity between the Kree and the Skrulls in the comic books, was the Skrulls kind of being turned off by the militaristic and barbaric functions of those early Kree. And, of course, in the Marvel movies, it was totally different in that the Skrulls were refugees that were being hunted by the Kree, and they were just fighting to survive.
They really didn't go in too much detail in the movie about the origin of the Kree-Skrull War. We're just at the time now where the Kree really have the upper hand, and the Skrulls are on the ropes and just kind of fighting for the survival of their race.
And I just reread the Kree-Skrull War. It takes place over a number of different Avengers comics, and it's just not good.
Yeah. You know, I never really liked the Kree. They just always struck me as kind of dicks.
It always struck me as bullies.
Yeah. Even when they were supposed to be the good guys, even I was, you know, Captain Mar-Vell and all that, I'm like, these guys just kind of seem like dicks.
But they always were kind of fashion-wise, looked pretty.
Yeah. They always kind of looked like dicks. But let me tell you about the head dick, the Supreme Intelligence, played by Annette Bening in the movie, which is odd.
It's odd, yeah.
But everyone sees their own version of it. That's only in the movie. And the
You saw Annette Bening?
What? I saw Warren Beatty. It was weird.
I always see Annette Bening. You guys all look like Annette Bening to me now. And you know what? I'm living my best life, so fuck off.
It was crazy. I saw Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
You saw Ruth Buzzy. Shut up. That would be really fun. That was a good burn. That wasn't bad. Someone help me out. That wasn't bad. You saw Ruth Buzzy? Come on.
What the fuck is wrong with Ruth Buzzy? She's a comedic talent. Powerhouse.
Fine. I can't argue with that.
Ruth Buzzy is like, what the fuck have you ever done right now? She's listening to the podcast, and she's writing in to Lucky Bastard at thelongboxguys.com to voice her displeasure.
To whom it may concern. Why does she sound like that? I can't do accents. I have just listened to your last podcast, and I disagree, dear says. All right, fine. Fantastic Four, number 65, August 1967, sees Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's creation of the Supreme Intelligence come into being. The Supreme Intelligence is kind of what it sounds like. It is the Supreme Intelligence of the Kree Empire. They take all their best minds, and they start just smashing them together. This sounds like it shouldn't work, but somehow it does. They just keep taking their smart people and pulling their brains out. Generals, philosophers, scientists, anyone that the Kree deem deep thinkers, remove the brain, stick it in the Supreme Intelligence, up the power up a little bit. Among its abilities is telepathy, telekinesis, cosmic awareness, precognition, postcognition. Wait, postcognition? Don't we all have that?
I think that's a cereal.
New postcognition. I really don't like this. Ability to alter reality, pretty good power. Energy and matter manipulation, and the ability to create up to three androids. Wait, three androids? That's pretty limited.
Three?
Yeah.
I have the Supreme Intelligence. I am all powerful. What do you got? I got three androids.
I got three androids. They come in three different sizes.
Yeah. I think Japan has seven right now. Come on, man.
This one's brand new.
Seven really good androids at that. So the Supreme Intelligence is their leadership. With their power of postcognition and precognition, they try to lead the Kree in this seemingly never-ending battle against the Skrulls for supreme domination over space. The Kree have at times taken not exactly the kindest view towards Earth. There's been at least a few times where we were thought to be nothing more than collateral damage in the Kree-Skrull War, and our entire planet was, just like in the movie, expendable. So I'm going to stick with my earlier assertion that the Kree are kind of dicks. The Skrull aren't exactly nice fellas either, but Kree was always kind of dickish.
I'll go with that. One Kree who really wasn't a dick was Captain Mar-Vell, created by Jim Starlin, Stan Lee and Gene Colan. He was made famous by Jim Starlin. He first appeared in Marvel Superheroes number 12 back in 1967. And Mar-Vell is one of the few Kree who decides that their military war is just, it's not really what he signed up for, and appreciates the people of Earth and decides that he's going to fight for the people of Earth and betray the Kree people. He undertakes the role of a Dr. Walter Lawson in the comic books, and in the movie he takes on she takes on the role of Dr. Wendy Lawson in the movie. So that's also played by Annette Bening. Some people have been upset that they turned Mar-Vell into a woman. Being a male or female is not essential to the character, so I don't think that really matters. The fact is that Mar-Vell is supposed to be a symbol in somebody that Carol Danvers looks up to, and that's what they try to establish in the movie, that, hey, yeah, I really respect Dr. Lawson, and that's the important thing. And again, Mar-Vell and Danvers getting fused together by an explosion is what created the superpowers in the comic books to begin with, and it's almost the exact same thing in the movie. But I think Annette Bening does a great job, although, fun Alex fact, she read the script, thought it was interesting, and then gave it to her kids to explain to her what all of that meant in the script, because she had no idea what the hell she was reading.
Wait, you saw Annette Bening?
Yeah, she was right next to Ruth Buzzi. It was hard to miss.
Okay.
So there are other Kree characters. You guys got any Kree characters you want to talk about?
I do. I have Ronan the Accuser.
Ooh.
Ronan the Accuser.
Not his first dance in the Marvel Universe, correct?
No. He was dancing with the Guardians of the Galaxy and the Nova Corps in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. Ronan the Accuser started out in the Accuser Corps, which is kind of a military organization for the Kree. He worked his way up. He stopped a Skrull fleet from entering Kree space, got promoted, and worked his way up the ranks to become the head accuser, got his own ship, and was the head accuser, and became kind of the main man. Not DC's main man, but the main man in the Kree force. He eventually, in the comics, took a couple of runs at the Supreme Intelligence because he felt that the Kree civilization should be run by an actual organic being and not the intelligence, and failed a couple of times at taking over the Kree civilization, was controlled directly by the Supreme Intelligence, et cetera, and so forth. So he's had a kind of storied history, and some of the plot lines he's worked for Thanos, and some of the plot lines that was a cover to kind of get more power grab. In the Captain Marvel movie, he had a sort of cameo where at the end of the film he attacked Earth, Captain Marvel defended, etc., and so forth. And strangely, Ronan kind of ran away. In the movie, he was played by Lee Pace, who has surprisingly played in other genre films such as the Hobbit trilogy, and he's also been in Pushing Daisies and a bunch of other films, so he's no stranger to the genres. He was born in March of 1979. He's an American actor. He's been on stage and television. He was in Pushing Daisies.
Pushing Daisies, by the way, one of the greatest TV shows to ever.
Well,
there, I said it. Prove me wrong.
There you go.
Prove me wrong, children. Prove me wrong. Well, I'm going to talk about one of my new favorite characters, because I knew almost nothing about the great, the wonderful Minerva, played by Gemma Chan. Minerva, one of the least successful female rapists of all comic book history. Dr. Minerva, as she was known in the comic books, comes to Earth to convince Captain Mar-Vell, the male Captain Mar-Vell, that they should have children together because it will advance the evolutionary potential of the entire Kree species. She wants super babies, and she pretty much tells him, put a super baby in me. When he refuses, she abducts Rick Jones to lure him aboard her spacecraft to make him have super babies in her. I am so glad that the dynamic is female to male, because we can laugh about it, because the other way around gets really, really creepy. And it's happened a couple times in comic books. Dr. Minerva, also just known as Minerva later, is the partner of the Kree Captain Atlas. We're going to talk about him in a little bit. They serve upon the light cruiser, the Ramatan. There's a lot about her that's kind of fun to talk about, but in the comic book, she's mostly just a sharpshooter slash crazy person who wants to advance the Kree at all costs.
Yeah, so Captain Atlas first appeared in Quasar number 9 back in April of 1990. He was created by Mark Gruenwald and artist Mike Manley. He was a native of Kree-Lar, and he was a graduate of the Kree Military Academy. He did become captain of the Ramatam, as you said, Tom. He was a special operative of the Supreme Intelligence. And he did accompany Dr. Minerva on a bunch of different storylines. He went and convinced some people to go to an AIM weapons exposition to try to obtain
It's basically Quasar. A villains convention. Yeah, I mean, it gets all nasty in those AIM ones, though.
It does.
Yeah.
But can you imagine walking around? Just imagine what the swag is like an AIM weapons exposition.
Yeah, and fun fact, Quasar number 9 was my 111th favorite comic that year.
They were pumping out a lot of bad comics back in 1990.
Yes, indeed we do. Let me just go back and say one more thing about Dr. Minerva, who's played by Gemma Chan. Have you guys watched the IT crowd?
Yes.
All right, so Gemma Chan had one tiny bit in the IT crowd. She was the female Sulu in the Renholm sex tape that he made that was based on Star Trek.
That's where I recognize her from.
That's where I recognize, honest to God, that is where I recognize her from. Because she says something along the lines of, damn it, I'm a... That's highly illogical for all of us to take off our clothes or something as ridiculous as that. And it's been killing me where I knew her from. And then finally I went back and looked at it. I'm like, yes, God damn it, that's it. Carry on.
You know, I don't know that I can follow any of that.
No man could.
All right. So we got Jan Rog, a.k.a. Magnetron, played by Jude Law. He is basically a dick. So he's Marvel's jealous commanding officer at one point. Marvel, Jan Rog, and a female character named Una, I think, are all stuck on this planet. And there's some mutual attraction there. They all get out alive. They think they're going to be lifelong buddies. And really, Jan Rog just becomes the jealous power play guy. And then basically for the rest of the time, he just keeps trying to undercut Marvel, trying to set him up. He, like, turns up the Danger Room simulator. He sends people to kill him. He often tries to be the adversary who doesn't come directly at you, but he comes from the angles, and he keeps trying to sort of mess with Marvel in that way. In the movie, Jude Law, you know, is more the sort of stand-up soldier, the heart of the team, and really trying to be a more direct adversary for Marvel in the film. I think Jude Law did an okay job. I mean, we haven't really even talked about the movie in any way, shape, or form, but we'll get to that. So Jan Rog, it's Jude Law. His alternate name, Magnetron, worst name ever. Carry on.
Worst name ever.
He sounds like like the worst Transformer, like the Transformer that got picked last.
Yeah, it's simple. Megatron, it separates pencil lead from metal. I don't know. It's a terrible name. It's worthless.
He transforms into a robot into a giant horseshoe magnet.
Yeah,
that's not great. That's not great. But Josh is a good point. We really haven't talked much about the movie. We still have a few characters of note to go over. I think we already talked about Atlas. Josh, you want to tell us real quick about Korath the Pursuer?
Nope.
All right. I'm going to talk just real quick about Monica Rambeau, only because when I first saw Monica Rambeau, I made the squealy noise in the face that made my wife go, I get it. She's something really important in comic books, but no one around you is a fuck, so shut up or watching a movie. Face. And she was right. That's exactly – I wanted to tell everybody, hey, it's the other Captain Marvel, the Captain Marvel I know, the Captain Marvel I like. So that's the Captain Marvel I kind of grew up with.
So, Tom, did you see on her mother's plane that her mother's nickname was Photon?
Yeah, everyone saw that, dickhead.
Sorry.
I, you know what? I got to tell you, I'm fronting. Mike pointed out to me last week.
You
he really did. He pointed out to me last week. I'm like, oh, I missed that. That's awesome. It is awesome. It's really cool that they have all these little little tidbits. Let me just say this. The Captain Marvel that I know was Monica Rambeau. She does a great job of it in the comic books, The Ultimates, The Mighty Avengers, Next Wave. A lot of these things, Operation Galactic Storm, Secret Avengers, look for the character because she's worth it. It's a fun, well-developed African-American female character. And the power set is fun. She can go almost at the speed of light. She's like right there. And she has all the super explosive powers, and she can do all kinds of manipulations with light. And she just seemed like the best Captain Marvel to me so far. Until the movie, now I really like this Captain Marvel. And
she was my first Marvel Captain Marvel.
That's what I just said.
The first – no, but
– He gets to have his feelings too, Tom.
I get to have my own
no feelings for you,
Captain Marvel, you bastard. Because I first was introduced to her when she was in the Avengers. Avengers.
I have a fun Alex fact about Captain Marvel, Monica Rambeau. She takes on the mockier – Captain Marvel, because Ben Grimm is like, the other guy just passed away. And she's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't go by that name. He goes, nah, I'm sure he wouldn't mind. And then later on, Captain Marvel's son, Legacy, takes on the name Captain Marvel. So she's like, oh, okay, well, it was his dad's name. So she changes her name to Photon. And then the dick that Legacy is... he changes his name to Photon, so she has to change her name to Spectrum.
Oh, wait, doesn't she know Pulsar first for a while?
She was Pulsar. She's gone through a lot of different names.
Yeah, she was Pulsar, then she finally goes with Spectrum, which I thought was cool. Yeah, Legacy was just a dick. Like, oh, yeah. Photon. That was your mom's play's name. But my powers are very photonic.
Yeah. he was a Legacy hire.
Yeah. I could talk about Bron Char, who had a total of 3 appearances in the comics. He had more screen time than he has page time, so I'm not even going to mention that. But I will say
You got to go in a little bit onto the Flurkin, though.
Let's talk about the Flurkin, aka Goose in the movie. In the comic books, he is Chewie. Either way, he's named after one of the best co-pilots ever. In the movie, it's Goose from Top Gun. Or Chewie after Chewbacca. He is recognized as a cat for up until an issue where the Guardians of the Galaxy cross over with Captain Marvel and Rocket sees it and starts shooting at the cat. And Captain Marvel's like, hey, don't kill my cat. He's like, what are you crazy? That's a Flurkin. You got to kill it before it lays eggs.
And that would have been the wise move.
It would have been the wise move. Later on, the Flurkin does lay a whole bunch of eggs, and chaos ensues. Flurkins are one of the most dangerous creatures in the galaxy. They should not be treated as pets. The Skrulls and Rocket are right. Although I will say, I do appreciate the fact that there were 4 cat actors who played Goose in the movie. Archie, Reggie, Gonzo, and
Rizzo.
Rizzo, thank you. Yes,
I noticed that too. I thought it was hilarious. There's another name in those credits that really stuck out. Did anyone catch it? He was an editor. Morning Star Shot. What a great name! I had to look him up because I didn't believe it. I thought it was one of those made up names that people use. Yeah, I read all the names in the credits. I get a little ADD going. And Morningstar Shot has worked on some of my favorite movies as an editor. The shot is spelled S-C-H-O-T-T. Morningstar Shot.
Wow.
Look him up on IMDb. Fun Alex fact, he exists.
Fun Alex fact, Morningstar is also a pseudonym for Lucifer.
Ooh, that'd be a good drink, the Morningstar Shot.
Same. Yeah. All right, so I got Talos, originally the Untamed, later the Tamed. Played by Ben Mendelsohn, born in Victoria, Australia, April 3rd, 1969. You might recognize him from Rogue One. He was Orson Krennic, the bad guy. Ready Player One, he was Sorrento. the bad guy. In this one, you think he's the bad guy, but he's not the bad guy. The real difference between the character here and the character in the comic is he is one of the few Skrulls who cannot shapeshift at all in the comic books. And in order to make up for his lack of hereditary advantage, he basically becomes the most vicious, brutal warrior in Kree society.
You mean Skrull society?
Skrull society. Skrull.
Damn it, Tom, and you're fucking Skrulling me all up.
Wait, are you saying he couldn't turn into a file cabinet?
No. He could not turn into a
Why would he want to be a file cabinet?
I don't know.
And by the way, I'm definitely going to be a fucking filing cabinet, one of our gods.
That makes you a mimic, not a Skrull. In the movie, Talos mimics who looks like Ben Mendelsohn, and Ben Mendelsohn also plays Talos in the makeup, so which is kind of a funny turnaround. But I was like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, same guy. I really like Ben Mendelsohn. He has a couple movies out that I really enjoy. Nice guy.
I enjoyed his portrayal in this movie. I thought he was really funny. I liked him sipping on that soda. Look at all. Like, hey, just sipping a soda. Not going to be menacing or anything. But we got your daughter outside. We were totally freaky Skrulls.
And since we're talking about stars that have been in some great genre films, who can forget Samuel L. Jackson, who was in The Clone Wars as, you know, Mace Windu? He is Nick Fury, or just Fury, in Captain Marvel. Fantastic actor. Nick Fury, of course, being from the comic books, from first appearance of in Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos back in May of 1963, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, also famously drawn by Jim Steranko, and was wonderfully done in this movie. I was really happy to see Nick Fury actually get some screen time in this film, since he's always just been kind of a bit character in the other Marvel movies.
And the CGI for Fury in this movie was incredible.
They did make him look younger. All right, we got to go over the plot. We haven't even gone over that. Who's going to the plot?
The plot of the movie?
No, the plot of the land. What do you mean? The plot of the movie.
Everybody knows the plot of the movie.
They've all watched it.
Otherwise, we're talking about spoilers.
Yeah.
What did people actually think of the movie? You haven't even talked about that. Did anybody like it?
I love the movie. It finally made the character Carol Danvers likable to me. I've already talked about that a couple times with you guys. Even on this podcast, I've said it. But before, she was kind of a dead fish to me. Now she's spunky and she's fun and she's funny, and I really enjoy her.
I really had to go with and hoped and prayed for Mike's prediction, where the post-credit scene was going to be Rogue draining her of all of her powers and flying away. I thought the movie was okay. Like, I was not, like, super overwhelmed by anything in the movie. The characters, the plot, the action. I thought it was pretty standard, bottom third of the Marvel. No, nothing like blew me away. It was a fine movie. It was a decent action movie. But without that, without Mike's predicted ending, it was kind of disappointing. I'll fucking
Josh.
I mean, it was a good movie, but it was certainly no Thor Ragnarok. It was no Black Panther, but it was still a good movie.
The flirking added a lot. Can we agree to that?
Yes. The cat was a great addition to it, but what the problem with the movie was is every character has to have, and please pardon the pun, it's in screenwriting terms, it's called the save the cat moment, where the audience has to develop some sort of empathy in relationship to the main character. What give us a reason why to like the character? And I was trying to figure out why this movie didn't quite work for me. It's because it took so long for me to get a moment where I actually liked Carol Danvers as a character. That wasn't until midway through about somewhere in the second act, where she gets captured by the Skrulls and it has to break out. And then she's running around the ship and she's fighting all the Skrulls. And now I'm sort of behind her. she has this whole problem where she's lost her identity and she doesn't know where she's from, and that's bothering her, but that's not what's driving the character at all in the movie. She's not trying to find out where she came from at all. That's just kind of a consequence of being there. She doesn't really develop into a character until she actually meets Marie Rambeau, and then you can see, oh, shit, now she realizes she's Carol Danvers, and it all starts to come back to her, all that relationship. And that's way too far into the movie for a lot of people, Josh and LT, to care.
I was going to say, it's really hard to form an emotional attachment to a character when they're acting unemotional for half the film.
Yeah, I think
that's not the dumbest thing you've ever said, LT. I mean, she really does kind of flat face it for a lot of that beginning part of the movie.
Yeah, because I mean, that was like the whole point of the Creed was like, you can't let your emotions get the best of you. So it was all suppressing emotions for like half of the film. And it's
generally don't like this film mechanic, I think they could have done the moment Mike's talking about her reunion with what's her name?
Rambo.
Marie Rambo.
Yeah. I just keep thinking Rambo in my head, and then it just all just jumbles in ways I don't want to talk about. But in that, like, that moment, and then they could have done the 7 days earlier, or, like, I generally don't like that trope or that sort of film mechanic, but in this case, giving you that emotional jump start up front probably would have kept us I was cheering for the character right from the get-go.
Yeah.
They could have fixed all that by not making Nick Fury such an essential part of the plot and making it Marie Rambeau, who is the one that she first encounters when she crashes into the Blockbuster and then heads over to find Project Pegasus. If she runs into Marie Rambeau there, who's still a pilot for some reason and is able to get her onto the base, she could have been the one who sneaks her in. She could have been her partner throughout. And that gives you that emotional connection right there. But
yeah, and also would have given the actress that played Rambeau a bigger part, and I really liked her.
Yeah.
She was good.
It was good.
But it was essential that Nick Fury play a bigger part in this role for two reasons. One, it was really, really funny to see him get hit in the eye over and over again. Wondering which time was it that's going to make that motherfucker lose an eye.
That's true.
It would have been really funny if, like, the very end, Coulson was just, like, sitting in the office playing with a rubber band, and it just flings off, and then you hear, motherfucker!
I was thinking a bottle of champagne when they won.
It would be great, too.
Like, how do you get that?
And just fade to black. You don't have to show it. Yeah.
That could have been a post-credit.
Champagne.
We also need Nick Fury in there a lot, just because there had to be a reason why he had the super-powered beeper.
Yeah.
Because that plays such a big part of Endgame. Like, oh, I got a super-powered beeper. I'm gonna be okay. I'm just going to use my beeper, guys. Everybody, it's okay. I have a beeper.
Yeah, there's been a lot of crap online. Like, why didn't Nick Fury use it in those other Avenger movies? Those seemed really important, too, like when they're in Invasion. Do you think this dude actually carried this stupid beeper around with him for 20-something years waiting for that event to happen? No. The alien invasion happened. He was like, fuck, I wish I had had my beeper on me. I could have really used Captain Marvel. And then when Ultrons are about to destroy the planet, he's like, fuck, I really should carry that beeper on me. And then he does.
And he never leaves that fucker behind again.
It took him like 7 years to find it. It was in his sock drawer.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe the cat fucking ate it. Bad kitty.
There's a bad kitty. Low-hanging fruit there, Josh.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, so I'm not going to give it my highest marks. I think it's somewhere in the middle of the pack also. But I really enjoyed it at the time. I mean, I had a great time at the theater. The crowd was super into it.
Yeah, I think it was a good film. It's just not the film that I'm going to, like, rush out to buy when it comes out on DVD. It's not the film that I'm going to, like, you know, put on time and time again to put on in the background to, you know, while I'm folding clothes. It's It's just not my going to be my go-to, but it is a good film.
I saw it as a matinee. It was worth seeing. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And it's not that we – and I got to agree with Tom, though. I've never liked the Captain Marvel character. In order to get prepared for this, I didn't mind her as Ms. Marvel from the 1970s comics, but I've never really been a huge Carol Danvers fan. And I have tried reading a number of different series for her. And except for the Chris Claremont stuff, she's never really struck me as an interesting character before or since.
Plus, she tried to arrest my man Luke Cage for a crime he hadn't yet committed. That ain't cool.
Not cool, Marvel.
And also, you said she became Warbird for a while?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember very distinctly her fighting a character called Warbird. It's one of the few comic books I had. Did she take an enemy's name just to be a dink?
Or maybe the enemy took her name afterwards. Who knows? I don't know how it works. But she was Warbird for a while in the Avengers.
And all right.
Her costume, let's face it, her costume in the movie is almost dead on to what it is in the comic books now. And that is a phenomenal costume. It is so much better than the French cut bikini that she used to have, or the original Ms. Marvel costume where it's got the open midriff and a scarf.
Oh, can we please talk about the haircut?
Okay.
All through the 70s and 80s, she had that weird Farrah Fawcett feathered crazy haircut in the comic books. That was just – it was so bad it was distracting.
She's always had long hair in the comics, except for recently. The short hair has been a new addition.
Well, all right. Let me find a picture of it, and you guys can tell me if I'm insane.
I mean, I never found it, like, that horrible. It was, you know, that type of hair was typical of the time period.
You know what hair I'm talking about, though, right?
Yeah, I know what hair you're talking about.
That weird feathered front thing.
Yeah.
Crunchy bangs. She was the only superhero ever to have crunchy bangs. That's weird to me. Superman never had crunchy bangs.
Superman had a mullet. Let's not talk about hairstyles. Yeah.
Superman has never been like on the cutting edge of hair cutting styles.
That's because it's cool Kryptonian hair. It's really hard to cut.
Really hard to cut.
Yeah.
I mean,
I can go with that.
What do you guys think about Stan Lee's cameo?
Stan Lee's cameo I thought was awesome. I thought it was amazing that he was reading from a Mallrats script.
Cried so hard, my wife had to go get me another soda.
I heard an interview with Kevin Smith where he talked about he actually knew that scene was going to be there, but he still ended up crying because of it. Because Kevin Feige had called him up, and they needed to get the day Stan did the shoot for that scene, he wasn't doing well. So they asked Kevin if he had some audio that they could play from Mallrats, the outtakes, so that way they could use that over and over with different voices of Stan. So that's actually was shot on Mallrats but not used in the Mallrats movie. That's how they got the voice in there.
Oh.
Wow. One of the things I heard Kevin Smith said is, you know, I've been giving Marvel shouts out my entire life, and to have them give me a shout out just made me cry.
Yeah. Other than Mallrats, I think Stan Lee is in probably most of the highest grossing movies of all time.
That's kind of a dick way of saying it, but yeah, gonna have to go with you on that one, buddy. What's the worst way we can say this? Oh yeah, okay.
What's the lowest grossing movie Stan Lee's ever been in?
It's Mallrats.
It's Morris.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
So did you guys like the end credit scenes? The mid-credit scenes and then the end credit scene? I knew there was something going on with the cat at the end credit scene.
I actually called that before it happened. I told my wife, the next scene is going to be the cat jumping onto a couch and throwing up the cube. And she's like, you don't know that. And then it was a desk.
So
I was hoping that it would spit out a helmet first.
A couple of people have asked me how did they get the cube back, not remembering that in the end of Captain America, the First Avenger, Tony Stark's dad has a submarine that finds it. Just for continuity.
Well, the cube gets found and lost a half a dozen times.
Right, but Tony Stark's dad finds it, and Howard Stark and Peggy Carter are the ones who form S.H.I.E.L.D. Project Pegasus is part of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
It's an excellent point, guys. Didn't even think of it that way. Maybe it's the Skrull Cosmic Cube?
No.
I don't know. Yeah. By the way, I just posted in our chat the haircuts that I'm talking about.
I never found it that offensive, but...
I don't think it's offensive. It's distracting.
I never found it that distracting, but...
All right.
Yeah, I see it, man. I got you. She had bangs. What do you
have? She had bangs.
You know what's weird, though? That's from the Ms. Marvel run, where Ms. Marvel had amnesia. So when she transformed into Ms. Marvel, her hair got short. But when she transformed back into Carol Danvers, she had long hair again. I guess I shouldn't be really freaked out that the hairstyle changed the clothes also changed.
And she can fly and shoot lasers, but yeah, but a haircut's freaking out.
Haircut.
Yeah.
She's got all the superpowers of a supercuts.
Yeah.
That's what's messing up, buddy.
That's the part that's
weird.
I
draw the line somewhere, and that's the Rubicon, my friend.
Flight, energy manipulation, able to survive in space. But goddamn, those crunchy bangs.
The hair.
Well, at that time, she only had flight and super strength and some minor invulnerability. She didn't get all the rest of the stuff until later on.
Oh, I can see why the hair would be
resistant to poisons.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Really?
And her only weakness is being sucked dry by Rogue. That's one of my weaknesses, too.
And being thrown into the sun.
And being thrown. And being thrown
not anymore. Did anybody else think it was really weird that she could fight a Skrull and they could take punches from her and then she just punched a nuke?
Now you're going to get
dollar powers.
Oh, no, you're going to get one of my worst. Here's one of the things I hate about superhero movies. It's when super strong people are like hanging by one hand on the edge of a cliff. I'm like, your personal body weight is so negligible. Why are you having a hard time pulling yourself up with a lip or something?
Let's see. Because they don't work out those muscles, Josh.
You can pick up a battleship, but you can't pull yourself over the lip of a cliff.
I'm going to agree with LT. I think LT's spot on. Different set of muscles.
They only have biceps. The pull-ups.
I'm like,
they're just used to punching. They don't do the pull-ups, man.
I hate that.
Superman is so used to fighting crowds that when he fights one guy, he just kind of throws him the fuck
He's
up.
So used to lifting battleships. When he just has to lift himself, he's so not used to that.
And he forgets he can just fly.
Yeah, it happens like 3 times in this movie, so it drove me a little nuts.
Well, there actually is a reason for that. She really doesn't access the full potential of her power. Until after that ship gets burned out.
She's still strong enough to throw people around. Not the full power. I'm just talking even her minor powers are enough to lift her 125-pound frame off the edge of a train. I'm sorry.
That is actually probably being cruel. I doubt Brie Larson weighs 125.
You are probably correct.
Maybe she's got those 45-pound weights on either side.
I think Brie Larson herself has an easier time pulling up than the character did in those scenes.
Probably so.
Bothers me.
Other things that bother me, kip-up pull-ups. Neither a kip or a pull-up. Discuss.
It's true.
I hate seeing people do those. I saw a guy doing like 100 of them at the gym. I'm like, you just look like a fish, dude. You look like a fish, dude. Look like a fucking idiot. I slapped him in the belly. They don't like that. It's crossers. They don't like that. All right. I guess that's everything from the movie. We liked it. We think of it as middle of the pack. We thought it was a good new way for Carol Danvers to be introduced. I think these are all things we agree on. Do a couple pull-ups every once in a while, Carol. Come on, help us out. Any last words on this movie?
Nope.
No. Go see it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they have, because we just ruined a bunch of shit.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Let us know what you think. Yeah. You know, write us at Lucky Bastard. Find us on Twitter at The Long Box Guys. Find us on Facebook. You know, send us your thoughts and feelings. Go follow us on Patreon, and you can message us there. We're happy to hear and listen to all opinions, even if they're wrong.
And we did a really fun goat this week, greatest of all time. If you subscribe to us at www.patreon.com/thelongboxguys for just a mere 25 cents a week, $12 a year, you can get the goat greatest of all time, where we sit around and talk about unimportant stuff, but important to comic book fans and geeks like us.
And what did we talk about this week?
Oh, so long ago, I don't remember. No, the greatest mentor-mentee combination. Oh, I wonder who it could be.
Ooh.
It's the master.
Ooh. You know, I was also going to think of Thundar. Thunder and Iron Fist, but they kind of hated each other at the end, so fuck them.
Thundar the Barbarian and Iron Fist?
Iron Fist?
From Marvel?
Like what kind of crazy crossover are you doing?
I think it's like Rom the Thunderer. He's the guy that trained Iron Fist. Yeah, it's a real guy. In Kunlun.
Okay.
I'll look it up later.
Hey, yeah. I thought you're supposed to keep what happens in Kunlun in Kunlun.
Well, obviously not, because he brought along with him that iPod, so.
Yeah, the problem is when they
Hey, that iPod was with him before he went
to
Kunlun.
You had to get him started on the iPod.
Yeah, the iPod.
I just had to dangle that little bait out there.
Yeah, him with the iPod.
Didn't mean to go off on a tangent. That's Josh's purview. Josh, you got a quick tangent for us?
No, Jesus Christ, we're freaking way over time.
Christ, my tangent is talking forever.
Keep going.
All right, then this is what we're going to do. Mikey, tell me a comic book I should read this week.
You should read The Amazing Spider-Man, because it's called The Hunted Series. Kraven is back, and he has hired Taskmaster and Black Ant to capture all of the superhero and supervillain animal-themed characters so he can fucking hunt them and kill them.
That's
well,
awesome.
It's African-American Ant.
No, it's not, because it's a white dude.
Oh, that's just racist. Tommy, is there anything I should have already read?
Well, you should have read the Captain Marvel series.
You should have talked about the old the Kraven the Hunted, one of Josh's favorite comic books. Mm. That would have been a nice bookend there.
Yeah,
Josh,
it would have been.
Do you recommend that one?
Well, I love that series.
That's a great. What was it actually called?
Kraven's Last Hunt.
Raven's Last Hunt. That was a terrific one. I think I'm going to read both of those this week because they both sound terrific. That is the best Back in the Long Box I've ever heard. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah.
And that is going to do it for this week. Let's give a couple plugs out there. Thank you very much to Kirby Crackle, who always do such a great job with the music. They're having a great time right now. I think it's Crackle Fest this week, right?
Sure, why not?
Sure. You guys don't know. This thing might come out anytime. Yeah. So Kirby Crackle's annual Crackle Fest is probably having some time within this month. And we wish them the best luck. I wish we could get out there. Someday we're going to have to go to Crackle Fest.
Indeed.
And we should thank Mark Russell, whose his latest comic book, The Wonder Twins. I just read issue number 2 this past week. Awesome. And Ahoy Comics has picked up Second Coming. So go tell your comic book guys. Mm-hmm. Put it in your pull list.
It'll be in my pull list. Did we already put out that Mark Russell interview we did?
Yes.
We did, and I'll try to fix it.
Yeah. Okay, for those guys who already listened to it, that little glitch in there, sorry about that. That was taking all our ums out in one shot and accidentally putting them in somewhere else.
Shotgunning Mark Russell in the face with our ums.
Sorry, Mark.
But let's try and fix that before we give the link to Mark to tweet out to his followers.
Yeah, let's give that a shot. And let's also talk about the dirge of great things coming out. Did you guys hear about Patton Oswalt?
Nope.
I mean, I've heard of him.
He's doing MODOK. Patton Oswalt is doing a cartoon MODOK.
He does have a perfectly square head.
If he does a BRODOK spinoff, it'll be the greatest thing that's ever happened in my life. including my marriage and meeting you guys. Why lie? And I was wrong, by the way. The villain I was thinking of was called Deathbird. Deathbird.
Yeah, that's close.
Yeah.
Fuck you, it is close. I'm not going to feel bad about messing
up. The second half is exactly the same.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, my God, she fights Steeplejack? Steeplejack makes another
Shot. Finish the podcast.
I'd like to, you know, give a shout out to geekorthodox.com.
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 Hi, Tammy. See you at Epic Nerd Camp.
Geekorthodox.com prepares a fine t-shirts and other geeky things, such as stained glass prints, Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses. The list goes on and on of all the great things you can get at geekorthodox.com and ianlino.com.
Yeah, and don't forget, you should check out our YouTube channel, which someday I'll actually put up some more videos. But Josh, you got your own YouTube channel. Tell us about it.
I do. I was going to plug myself. Go to beer-tube.com, beertube.com, and just find some YouTube videos. I started reviewing craft beer versus national beer, and I'll be doing spotlights on local breweries and beer locations around New England.
Ooh. Oh, we should do a tour when we get our motorcycles. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my helmet's in today.
Oh, what kind of helmet did you get?
Oh, shit. Oh, so, wait, talk
show, show me after. Show me after. All right. So that does it. That does do it for us, guys. And once again, I just want to thank everybody for listening to us. Look at us. Look for us for a few local New England conventions coming up. We put in for a couple. And thanks again. And Mike, what's this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
And Josh, you're going to be on the road with me on the bikes looking at beer.
That's that too. Beer? And in 2 weeks, PAX East will be my my sector.
Oh, there's also a gaming one this weekend at Mohegan Sun. You going to that?
No.
Take a look at it. I'll go with you if you want to go. Hey, Tommy. Sweet Tommy. Love of my life. Any last words?
Hey, man, if you get pushed down, get back up.
I ain't never going to knock me down. I get knocked
back
down.
Up.
I get up again. They ain't never going to knock me down. Bring it up again. I'm going to go on.
And don't forget what Tom always says.
I get knocked down. I get up again. And don't take time to diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. You're going to live a lot longer. Love you guys and have a great night.
You guys can ride your bikes, and LT and I will be in an RV behind you. LT, you wear a red shirt with a lightning bolt on it, and I'll molest you.
Yes,
you know what? I think we picked the right. I think we picked the right spot to be there, Josh.